Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and this is Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to author and midlife coach, Alana Kirk.
And I talk about our generation being the bridge. Yeah. We are the bridge between the women who couldn't. We're in that transactional part of moving from a patriarchy to an equity. And we have to redefine. We have to role model. We have to trailblaze. We have to grab this life by the love handles and turn down the dimmer switch on all of the bullshit that put women in a place and made them feel smaller and negative and critical. And we have got to learn how to thrive as individuals, as well as the roles and responsibilities that we have, so that our daughters can walk into this world becoming everything that they can be.
Originally from Belfast, Alana lives in Dublin with her three teenage daughters, Daisy, Poppy and Ruby. Their two cats, Tiggy and Pooka, and their rescue dog, Mojo. She works as a midlife coach and is in the process of writing her third book. And in this conversation, she shares her own story with us, which is really powerful. We also talk about how much our own lives have changed in the last 16 years since we first met. And throughout the conversation, there are nuggets of wisdom and practical tips to bring into our own lives. Alana is a gorgeous person. She's compassionate and quick-witted, and I took so much from this chat.
So, Alana, we actually met for the first time. I was working it out back in 2008. Mm-hmm. So that's 16 years ago now, mm-hmm. when you were on a show that I used to present with my sister. So it was a daytime TV show on RT. It was called Shoiga. And every week...
Catchy name.
And every week we used to do a slot about books, celebrating books, talking about books. You take a book and you'd give your opinion on it. And another chap called Hugo would give his opinion. Sometimes you'd agree, sometimes you'd disagree. And it was definitely one of my most favourite parts of the week. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So that's when we first met and worked together. And then years passed and I saw you on telly. The beginning of last year on the Tommy Tiernan show, and you were phenomenal. And then obviously I knew about your book coming out, Midlife Redefined, Better, Bolder, Brighter.
And then you were saying to yourself, hang on, that woman, we're not middle-aged because we only just met. And it was 16 years ago.
I know, and 16 years ago just went by in a flash. And then we bumped into each other a few weeks ago at the Daniel Matte event down in Cork. All these lovely crossovers. And here we are now having this conversation. So I'm really looking forward to this. But isn't it bizarre to think? So I was like, when I think about it now, I felt like I thought I knew so much. Mm. At the time, at 29, when I was presenting that TV show, I was living in Dublin. My life is extremely different now. And I've, you know, there's been definitely a few drops under my bridge and for you also. So I was doing the math. You were about 38, 39.
Yes. And, you know, on paper, my life, it looked like I had checked a lot of the boxes on that checklist of success that we often set out. You know, I have an 18-year-old daughter now who was three used to watch me on the TV with you. And and actually what's really interesting is that the very last episode that we did was the last, happened to be the last show of Shoiga. Mm. Say that with a cocktail. And you just find out that the show wasn't being redone or renewed.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's a lot of disappointment in the room. But it was really interesting because I was, unknowns to anybody, suffering a miscarriage that day, and from the day before, and I would come in. It's really interesting the way that I have ended up, and we'll probably get to that now, where we've all ended up in life. But often when I'm giving talks, I always mention the fact that I had seven pregnancies and three babies at the end of it, because it's such a silent experience for so many women. And I know, and if I may say this, and I might say it a few times through this, that I'm really proud of you because I've obviously kept in touch by following you over the years. And I know that's something you've spoken about and being really important about making people feel less alone, or maybe saying things sometimes that other people aren't sure how or what to say. And so I think if I look back, and I didn't see you again until maybe a couple of weeks ago, and in those 16 years, both our lives on paper looked amazing. Here were you fronting this TV show, one very clear trajectory. Here was me, married, two kids, trying for a third, you know, having a wonderful time with my parents, very clear trajectory. And our lives have gone very different roads.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's part of what I do as a midlife coach, is helping women navigate the very, very messy middle of life, because it can't always, doesn't always go the way we want.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And right back at you. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like where do we start? Because I look back at that girl, you know, when I'm thinking of myself.
Oh, thank you. Even though I'm 10 years older, I'm sure you're meaning me.
Both of us. The girl within. The girl within both. And I just think, yeah, for me, the period of my 30s was a huge period of growth. And I suppose because I was given challenges that I had to deal with, and they became a gift really in my life. And a lot of people can go through those, wait a second, what does it all mean stuff at different stages? So it doesn't necessarily need to happen. You know, for me, I suppose a huge one was, well, a few of them, but like obviously 32 having cancer was a big one. But it can happen at different stages. And there's so much to talk about, but I do think you talking about yourself, perhaps giving us a better sense of, you know, the person that you are now with all the wealth of experience and challenge and highs and lows that you've experienced will really give the listener a really whole sense of why you're so passionate about the work that you do now.
Well, like you say, I think I was 37, 38 at that time, and I had checked a lot of the boxes that I had thought were the ones to check. And we all start in life. I have an 18-year-old daughter, and I can see her creating that checklist, maybe not on paper, but in her mind, of when she will look back. She doesn't seem to be able to get past 35, that, you know, she'll have arrived at 35 if she checks the following boxes. And, you know, for me, that was a lot of travel, study, get a career. I wanted to be Kate Adey growing up in Belfast. She was the only female role model that I saw doing something out of the male world. And, you know, growing up in the 70s, 80s, Belfast, people, but women in particular, were very much told where to stand and which side of the fence to sit on. And Kate Adey represented to me this sense of freedom.
Yes.
And I went on to study politics, worked for UNICEF for many years. And I was lucky enough to go to places like Iraq and Sierra Leone and just experience that sense of adventure. And then I kind of came back here, moved to Dublin, and started to check the rest of those boxes on my list. And within 9 months, I had bought the house, got engaged and had the positive pregnancy test. And
that was quick.
It was quick.
Yeah.
And in the next 5 years, because I was sort of late to it, like a lot of women in our generation. And, you know, for 5 years, like I say, I had 7 pregnancies. The energy of that time was, you know, having babies, losing babies, trying for babies, raising babies. It was hectic, you know, trying to juggle, create a family, create a new career. I stepped back from that big sort of 7-day-a-week kind of career. I'd worked for Bernardo's for a few years at that point as well. And trying to figure out who I was now off that central stage that had defined who I was and figure out who am I now as a mother, which I struggled with initially. But still, it looked on paper like it was all still working.
Yeah.
And then finally I had Ruby, my third baby, and it felt, I remember the day she was born, my mum was there at the birth, and it felt like, oh, right, it's all over. That energy of the last 5 years of trying to form this family, I know, yes, I've still got to raise them now, but that piece is done. And then sadly, 3 days later, my mum had taken my other two girls out for a walk for the day and had come back, and I was bringing Ruby home the next day, and she'd rung me and she ended every conversation the way she always did. I love you and I'll see you tomorrow. And she went and read my girls a story, came out, and her brain just exploded and she had a catastrophic stroke. And she was rendered, you know, brain damage, never said my name again, completely paralyzed. I needed 24-hour care for the next 5 years. So I literally went from, you know, that 5 years into what I called my sandwich years, spoon feeding my mum alongside my baby for the first year. And then my baby went up and went to school and my mum stayed the same and eventually died. And
how many years was she?
5.5 years.
Alana, that is so, I mean.
If someone had said to me when, because, you know, when she had the stroke, I literally had to be taken out of one hospital and brought to the next because I was still in hospital.
Gosh.
And I remember distinctly putting Ruby down to sleep. And my husband at the time was due to come in the next morning to bring me home. And I went to sleep. And the next thing, all I remember is the door slamming open into the room, the lights coming on. And I woke up and I immediately thought, oh, my God, I've slept through the night and haven't fed the baby, because I just assumed he'd come in the morning. And I looked up and I saw his face and I knew immediately my life had changed.
Okay.
And in the 3 seconds it took him to walk from the door to the side of my bed, in my head, I just went, who is it? Who is it? I knew by his face that my life had changed irrevocably. And I went through my dad, my mum, Daisy, Poppy. And I just said, who is it? And he said, it's your mum. And I had to get out of that hospital, get into the car where he had carried mum to the first hospital. So she'd been sick in the car, got into St. James's and didn't recognise her. Like, she'd aged 50 years. She was an old woman, totally unable to recognise me or anyone. And I had a 4-day-old baby in the car seat under the emergency bed. And there was a guy who'd just been brought in stabbed and he was shouting at everybody and screaming. And I remember just saying, please stop. I thought those were my mum's last minutes.
Okay.
And then for that week, my dad and my brother, we just rounded round my mum and couldn't believe she was going to die. Couldn't believe she was going to die. She was such a vibrant, colourful, bright, glamorous, loving person. And then the worst thing happened. We realised she wasn't going to die. She was going to live. And she was going to live like that. And if someone had said to me at the time, I think often when we don't know what's ahead of us, we couldn't imagine getting through us. And I was thinking about you and me in that 16 years. And I think about who we've both become in this time. And some of that's because of our own ambition and our own, our own vibe and our own push and creativity. But some of it is because of, and despite certain hardships and where life has taken us different ways, we've pulled at different threads and guiding lights in our life. And, you know, my life took a different trajectory. At the end of all that, my marriage ended. My husband came out as gay. So just 9 months before my mum died. And so in that very short space of time, I kind of was cast adrift from the family I'd been born into and the family I'd created.
Like, this stuff is huge, Alana, isn't it really? Like, and there's so much that you've said already. And I'm thinking back to even you saying on that last show that you were experiencing a miscarriage, and still there was a sense of the show must go on with you, that you've got such strength of character, a sense of coping and getting on and just doing and pushing on.
And I think that's a great strength. And I think many, many women have it. And men, but I think in particular women. And I've just spent 2 days at the National Menopause Summit. I was doing a talk there on aging powerfully. And, you know, so many of the stories we heard were about women just being expected to get on with it, despite the fact that here we are in 2024 and most of us don't have the information we need or support we need.
And how destructive that can be.
Sure. So I do think it's a strength and a weakness.
I agree.
And part of what I do as the midlife coach, so, you know, my life fell apart. And then I had to build myself back up and piece myself back together. And it didn't happen overnight, obviously. I wasn't going, oh, great, my husband, as he packs the spare glasses into the boot of the car, going, oh, this is a learning opportunity.
I'm going
to rise from this. Or my mum. But I can tell you now, one of the most things I'm most grateful for in my life was that we gave my mum the death she deserved. And I know that sounds odd, but we cared for her in a way that we'd never have been able to show her that expression, you know, and I'm glad that I was able to do that. And all of us, me and my brother, and, you know, in the end, we fought for her to die and we brought her home and I got onto the bed and I held her and my brother held one hand and my dad held the other. And we just kept saying over and over, we love you. And she died how she loved living, surrounded by her family. But these are the things that shape us.
Yeah.
No, I'd have preferred it if she hadn't. I'd preferred it if she was still here helping me. And I hope I would still be able to show her my love. But I do think one of the reasons when I talk a lot about when I'm working with women, I work as a midlife coach. So I work with women who are maybe navigating change. Some of that's really positive. Some of that's because they want to. And some of it's because just life evolves. But often it's about helping them connect the dots or pull the different threads of their life to weave the next fabric. We don't just sit in splendid isolation with what's happening. We're all pulling. And, you know, from that experience, I had started writing a blog to process parenting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, 20 people read it initially. It wasn't in any way to be exposed as a great writer. It was for me to practice the art of writing, because when I became a parent, I lost a real sense of myself. I loved them. It was amazing. I didn't expect to love them the way I did. And I know that sounds weird, but, you know, I wanted to be Kate 80, you know?
Yeah, no. It doesn't sound weird. It's you know what? It sounds really honest.
Yeah.
And I think the more we can have these honest conversations, the more we give permission to others to own how they're feeling as well. So it's refreshing to hear it. Obviously, you were passionate about writing, and because obviously every week you were reading these books and you were giving your opinion so beautifully and insightfully every single week. And when I think about it now, you obviously had a 2-3-year-old at home. I was thinking, like, how did you get the time to read a different book every week? But you made the time. You did it. And it was your passion.
It was. And books and writing and words have always been my passion. And interestingly, you know, I wouldn't have been able to process this at the time. And that's why I do what I do now, to help women sometimes process what's really happening, so that they understand they have a lot more skill or threads or guiding lights in their life than they thought. And so I'd started this blog because I did not know how to be a parent. And Evan was telling me that I should love every minute of parenting. And I didn't. I still shudder when I look at a playground.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's nice a couple of times pushing your child, but oh my God, the sanity sucking boredom of trying to enter child.
So do you prefer the teenage stage?
I love the, well, yes, I do. I love the young stage too.
Included.
I really did. I mean, I love those squidgy, gorgeous, warm bodies who you still have, get into bed with you. Only one of mine does that now and she'll kill, well, she won't be listening to this. But I started to write because when I was born in 1970 and I was being in my formative years in the teenage years, the only way to become a writer was to become a published author or work for a newspaper.
Mm.
And I didn't believe I had the voice to do that because, you know, we might get into the context of women's lives. Certainly in that point of time, you're very much told who you should be. And I did not feel like I was the person to have a voice. I would read all these amazing women writers like Alice Walker, Maya Angelou and Virginia Woolf and just these incredible women. And they spoke to me in a way that I just didn't really comprehend. But suddenly at a time in my 30s, blogging became a thing. And suddenly there was an opportunity to be a writer without being a published writer as such, although you were publishing yourself. So I was doing workshops because I had stepped back from my big career and I was looking after the kids and I was trying my hand at different things. And I was told, if you want to be a writer, write. Now, whether that's you're ever going to be a published writer or not, if you want to call yourself a writer, just like you can call yourself a baker, you can call yourself a gardener, you can call yourself whatever, but you have to be doing your hands dirty in the dirt. And so, but I use that process of blogging to process how I manage parenting and understanding that I was getting this external narrative telling me how I should feel, telling me how I should look. I literally didn't know how to be a mother. So I had, you know, my work uniform and then that left. And I remember going to my mother-in-law's house one day in England and she had a Bowdoin catalogue, which is this sort of UK, very bright prints and lovely. And I remember looking at that Bowdoin catalogue going, oh, is that what a mother's supposed to look like?
Right. Yeah.
And I just ordered loads of clothes from Bowdoin because I thought, oh, if I dress this way, that's how I'll feel. And I loved these children and I felt a loss of sense of agency. Mm-hmm. So I started to write about that and was very scared to do that. So it felt like a safe environment because not many people were reading. But what was really interesting is I found readers and I found other writers and I found people in that space. And then when my mum had her stroke, I just kept writing, but I changed the name to The Sandwich Years because I was now sandwiched between care of my mum and looking after my dad, caring for her because he was the one who looked after her 24 hours a day, and I and my small children. And I started to process. And from that, a publisher saw that blog and gave me my first book deal, The Sandwich Years. I didn't go looking for that. I didn't ever think about writing nonfiction. And one of the reasons I do is the work as a midlife coach is because not just that my life had its ups and downs. And of course, my story is unique to me. Your story is unique to you. But our stories are the same in that nobody gets through life unscathed.
Yeah.
Yet we're told a lie. I always remember 1,000 years ago when I was traveling in Vietnam and I got talking to this old man, wonderful old Vietnamese man. I was playing chess with him in a cafe and we got talking and I was probably being a really obnoxious 20-year-old Western traveller going, oh my God, I just love Vietnam. I love the vibe, man. And, okay, you know, you can just imagine. And he, I remember him saying to me, but that's the difference between you and me in the West and the East. In the West, you're brought up to believe you deserve happiness. Mm. If you work hard and you do everything right, happiness is delivered to you on a plate.
Yeah.
Us in the East believe that life is life and you will experience happiness. So embrace it because it will go, just like you will experience pain and sorrow and suffering and get through it, support yourself through it because it will go. Mm. And I never forgot that conversation. Of all the billions of conversations you have in your life, I'm sure there's probably 10 you would remember specifically. I remember that one. And I think another thread when I started to try and figure out how to pull myself back together, because it wasn't that my mum had died or that my husband had left and I was suddenly left a single parent, Keys kids. It was that, and it happened 2 weeks before my 45th birthday, and I know you've just turned 45. I remember staring in the mirror and thinking, it's not just that, it's the fact that I didn't know who I was. I'd had my head barreled down in survival mode for so long.
Sure.
And the reason I do what I do now, I ended up going back to college, studying psychology, and I had never a smidgen of doubt that I would work with women because of that sense of loss of self. And it's such a, you know, women in midlife are the busiest and least supported cohort of society. And that's backed up with research. You know, it used to be the biggest threat to a woman's life was death. And I know we're seeing that in Gaza now. And I say that with the respect of that.
Sure.
The greatest threat to women's lives today is the threat of overwhelm and burnout and to their emotional and mental well-being. Mm. You know, the highest rate of suicide in women is aged 52. And it is a really messy time. And it, partly because we are this wonderful, unique generation of women. We have an extra 20, 30 years of life expectancy. You know, when my mum was born in 1937, her life expectancy at birth was 59.
Mm.
But because of the improvements in health and everything, she was, you know, in her 80s. And when my youngest was born in 2010, Ruby, her life expectancy at birth is already up to 100.
Like,
you know, her late 80s is likely to be adjusted. So between them, that's an extra 20, 30 years. In midlife, not old age.
That's right. It's huge, isn't it?
It's huge.
Can I ask you, when you were 45, how old were the girls then?
Ruby was three,
right.
Six and seven. So it was hectic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So for the 5 years, was your mom completely unaware?
She knew who she loved.
Okay.
That was extraordinary. And that does make me just feel such a, you know, my daughter at the moment, my youngest is 13, and she's the last 2 nights for some reason, she keeps coming into me going, I'm really scared. I'm really scared about right. life, and I'm going to die, and then there's going to be nothing. And does the world just keep going on and on? And I said, I don't know. I know that, here's what I know. I know that my mom knew who she loved. When I walked into the room, she didn't know my name. I don't even know if she knew I was her daughter, although I think she knew something, but she knew who she loved.
Yeah.
And I believe that energy carries on. And, you know, I often work with women who are going through grief or loss. So maybe they've lost a parent, or maybe they've lost a partner, or they're divorced, whatever it might be. And they keep talking about this need to move on, or whether it's from a marriage, or whether it's from a disappointment of a career. I need to move on. And language is so important. One of my threads is words. And as a you know, as a coach, what I do is listen to what women are saying, because it's often it's words that's holding them back. It's beliefs mm-hmm. that's holding them back. And that's such a devastating belief that you have to move on. I prefer to use the words moving along. Yeah, I move along yeah. with my mom. I haven't moved on from her, sure. but I've moved along with her. She's still with me. Her memory's with me. She's still a big part of my life. And now I'm facing into actually my father's ill. And, you know, my life is going to change again in the next couple of years. I'm probably going to lose my dad. My eldest is leaving home. And that sense of ownership of myself is really important in the terms of how I talk about aging powerfully, is that I have to not protect myself from that, but how do I support myself through that?
Yeah.
And how do I become the woman I need to be to release my children into the world, release my dad with all the gratitude and love, and live a full life for myself? And that is a lot of what I do, is helping women maybe even use that language, because the really exciting thing about us is that we are this transitional generation of women, be that now in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, we're all that transitional generation, which are moving out from a patriarchy, which has been on for 2000 years, where society was formed around the concept that men did and women supported. That has been the basic concept. And even up to 2 or 3 decades, that's how the career ladder structure of careers is. You know, men went to work, women supported them at home. And then we've had these wonderful, amazing opportunities, and they've come our way, and choices and chances. But we haven't quite reached equity. So we are the generations in transition.
Yeah.
And there's good and then there's bad. We have these amazing opportunities and freedoms. We don't have to get married. We don't have to have kids. We can be divorced and not be pariahs. We get this whole life after maybe raising kids. We get to do whatever we want career-wise. You know, I look at my girls and they just don't see any of the restrictions to who they can be that I would have seen.
Yeah.
So that's all the positive. The hard part of that, the context of women's lives that I'm always trying to get them to see, is we also still carry an awful lot of the baggage and the conditioning that we're meant to be all things to all people, that we have to, you know, look after everyone else's needs before we can look after our own, that we can't prioritize ourselves. And that's the piece of taking ownership and aging powerfully, that you've got to understand the context of your life. When it feels hard, it's usually because it is hard.
Yeah.
Now ask yourself, what do I need to get through it?
What
and
do
then
need
take
to get
advantage
through
of yes. the opportunities that
yeah.
are coming your way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. These are really important questions. I'm getting the feeling, and maybe it's an incorrect assumption, so you can obviously jump in and correct me if necessary, but were you somebody who liked to be in control? I mean, did you have perfectionist tendencies, do you think?
Oh my God. So I call it the triad of turmoil, and as a way of describing that negative part of our wonderful, unique midlife. We get to redefine every aspect of our lives now, which is incredible. And we suffer a lot still from that triad of turmoil, perfectionism, people pleasing, and imposter syndrome.
Mm.
And so what I often talk about is that women in particular need to understand, often the first thought in your head isn't yours.
Oh, yeah. Where does that voice come from?
That voice is not yours. It could be your parents, yeah. it could be your teachers, it could yeah. be societies, yeah. it could be the thing.
Mm.
Understand that the first thought in your head isn't yours. That's the people pleaser, it's perfectionism. So when I was that woman trying to rebuild herself, one of the things that I had to do was let go of the perfectionism that had nearly destroyed me, you know, as destroys a lot of women.
Yeah.
And that triad is constantly telling us, and aging powerfully and taking advantage, tipping the scales in your favor of all of the opportunities in this extended midlife, and the fact that we're in transition stage out of patriarchy, is understanding that you and the dimmer switch. You've got to learn to dial down that noise and understand what's your true voice coming through.
That's not easy.
It's not easy.
You know, when you've been in this kind of, you know, play on the program, you got to just catch yourself. And the catching yourself is the key.
Yeah. And that goes into really being, try and be aware of your energy and your emotional energy and where you are. Because as I say, a lot of women, and I, you know, mine was maybe a little bit extreme, but I have met so many women who have different versions of. And you can just get into emergency mode for a long period of time.
Yeah. Get the head down, get through. I mean, as you said, like for those period of, what was it? You said 5 years, you were either, and I'm so sorry for your losses. And, you know, I feel that, I hear that. And for what it's worth, I'm terribly sorry, but I'm also full of admiration for your honesty. And again, it just goes to show we have no idea what's going on in people's lives. That day in the last show, we were all just so consumed with our own. The show is finished. This is the last one. We were quite emotional. And then while that's going on, you are going through, you know, one of the most awful things that can happen to a woman. And you were still there on the couch smiling.
But I think, would I have done it differently with the hindsight that I have now? Probably not, because I think you're always fighting for the next life while dealing with this life. And, you know, I talked earlier about, we set off in life with that checklist, and we're very much in a chasing energy. And we kind of, we spend our 20s, I say, you know, we ask the question, what do we want our lives to look like? We're creating that checklist for which we will look back and go, oh, I'm successful. I've got the house, I've got the partner, I've got the kids, I've got the education, I've got the job, whatever it is that's on, decent bra, whatever's on your success list, right?
decent bra.
30 years trying to chase that down. And midlife is a really important time to check in, whether that's in your 30s. I mean, I preferably prefer to do it all the time now. I happen to do it at a time that woke me up out of it.
Yeah.
To ask a better question, you know, not what I want my life to look like, but what do I want my life to feel like? And then try and respond to that rather than react to the what do I want my life to look like. And checking in regularly to see that you've changed and evolved. And because I think when you have that checklist mentality, when you have that chasing mentality, which is essential in the beginning part of your life, but you have to stop and upgrade the software sometimes because it doesn't necessarily, you know, suit you. Because I think what happens is when you have that checklist, apart from the fact that then you're putting your happiness into something that isn't in your control, of we've discovered that, you know, if you say this is the only way that my happiness is going to look, if I work hard enough, as that man in Vietnam said to me, I deserve happiness, I will check those boxes. Life's going to laugh in your face.
Yeah.
And you're putting the power of your happiness out of your control. Whereas, and also then you're waiting to arrive. You're always chasing. You're waiting to arrive and get your welcome cocktail. You know, and especially women, if I can just get through that 5 periods of raising the family a bit, or having, now I can just raise them, it'll be fine. Or if I can just get through this period now of looking after my mom, then I'll be fine. If I can just lose a bit of weight, if I can just, you know, find the love of my life, if I can just get this, someone's going to hand me a welcome cocktail and I'll be really happy. The welcome cocktail is never coming. Okay. Well, I hope somebody gives me a welcome cocktail in my last couple of years.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
And the energy that I try to help women see, that it's not about arriving, it's about becoming. And it is this idea of, and I hope you take this the way I mean it. I do not mean to be patronizing, because I all say it about myself and I'll say it about my clients, but I'm really proud of who you've become. So when I met you 16 years ago, you were this glorious woman and you showed me a very deep kindness that day, even though you didn't know what was going on. And Hugo was meant to probably win that little series of book review things because I'd won the first one. And he started to slag off Pride and Prejudice. And, you know, I was having none of it, because not only was I going through a miscarriage, no one was going to take Pride and Prejudice away from me.
Yeah.
And something must have showed up in my face, because you said in the end, no, I'm going to give it to Alana. And afterwards she said to me, I don't know, I just saw something in your face. And you
did. That's so interesting,
isn't
it? You
saw something in me. But who you've become since then is this at 45, look who you've become. You've become someone who's pulled at different threads of her life, who has overcome certain things, chased certain things. You've thickened, and I don't just mean a waistline, I mean the taking it in the Diane Ackerman view of, she writes this beautiful quote, which I use all the time. She wrote, I want to get to the end of my life and not just have lived its length. I want to get to the end of my life and have lived its width.
Yeah.
And that is about becoming, and it's very hard for women in midlife sometimes to widen their lives. It becomes very just get through the day, tick the boxes, and going back to understanding, you've got to understand the context of your life. When it feels hard, it's because it is hard.
Yeah.
And when I look at you now, you're pulling at threads, you're thickening, you're widening the width of your life, you're trying to. And who are you going to become over the next 10 years? If we were to have this conversation at 55, when you're 55, and I'd be 64, my life will look different. My kids will have left home. My dad will have died. I will may or may not have met the love of my life. I'll be traveling. I'll be living a different energy of my life. And so will you.
Well, first off, I'm really flattered, obviously deeply flattered by what you said. But and I do struggle with compliments, but I'm going to not listen to that voice.
You're going to widen your life. And I'm going to widen it.
And I'm going to say thank you so much for saying what you've said. I'll also say that that kind of get on through is a lot of my life, I feel, at the moment as well. And these are the periods we're in. This is why this conversation is so important. Where whatever stage we're at, and midlife, I suppose, doesn't have a start point. I'm guessing it doesn't necessarily, it starts at this age.
No.
It can start at different ages.
Because of this extension, I kind of say, you know, look, it's whenever you've stopped being really young. Basically, and you're not really old. It is a decades long. It could be a 4, 5, 6 decades long stage. And
so, you know, for some people, it could be it
30s,
could start
40s,
in their 30s,
50s, 60s,
yes, I getcha.
Whatever. And you know, this idea we're redefining everything because, you know, that I hate that pseudo posturing that still younger is better, that, you know, 40s the new 30 and 50s the new 40. Absolute. Am I allowed to swear on here?
Yes.
Bullshit. I mean, 40 is the new 40. There has never been a more amazing, dynamic, pressurized 40. 50 is the new 50. The number of clients, I went back to college at 47, the number of clients changing careers, leaving marriages, redefining marriages, completely changing up their life. 60, there's never been a sexier 60 in history. 70, there's never been a 70. So we are redefining all those ages. But I think it's really important to, you know, we women in particular were never brought up to have a relationship with themselves. We were very much brought up to be in relationship with or to other people. We were almost the accessories. And what I try and help people do and see is that we've got to have that relationship with ourselves. And part of that is understanding, where are you on that energy map? First of all, please let me see the context of my life. When this feels hard, it's because it is hard. I've got amazing opportunities. I have amazing potential. And I'm still living in a transactional period from patriarchy to equity. So it is really hard. There is far more work on my shoulders. The system has not made everything equal for me. There is still a massive, you know, salary gap, pension gap, orgasm gap. You know, there's a lot of knowledge and scientific research gaps. There's a lot of stuff. So just acknowledge where you are. But that energy piece is really important. So, you know, you're chasing energy. And we go and understanding where you are. I had a client recently and she couldn't understand why. She's 55. And the life she kept describing to me, because I will often help women say, what is your definition of success now for your marriage, for your kids? I redefine my definition of success for each of my kids every September because they're growing another age. And it's really important for me to go, what do you need from me as a 17-year-old? What do you need from me as a 13-year-old?
What a great question to ask.
So I will always get women to say, define what success looks and feels like for you now at this age and stage. And it could be different from a year ago.
Can I ask, when did you start doing that with them?
Probably in the last 5 years. And, you know, I will parent Daisy, who's 18, very differently to Ruby, who's 13. Because Daisy, over the last year, I transitioned out of the parenting like this, with my arms almost wrapped around her, to slightly back with my arms slightly under her. I stopped telling her what to do. And I started saying, do you want my opinion?
Okay, yeah.
And there was a few months where she got quite giddy in that, where she said no. And it's interesting now, she keeps going back, well, out of interest, what would you say? Or what is your opinion? And it's because I have got, you know, going back to the idea of becoming, what kind of parent does she need me to become so that she can be a dynamic, feisty, independent, resilient young woman? what kind of parent do I want to be to an adult daughter? I work with so many women who are having issues with their adult children because they never did that transition piece.
Okay.
But redefining what success looks and feels like to you. So I had this client and the life she was describing just wasn't happening. But it was because I said, okay, and I could see she was using old goals, updated systems. So I said, I want you to write out all the goals and that you had at 35. And I want you to write out what you want at 55. So she wrote these two lists and maybe there was about 15 things on each. Only two were the same.
Right.
And I said to her, the energy behind those 35 goals looked like chasing to me. She was trying to set up a business. She was a single parent all of her life with that child. She was chasing, chasing, chasing to get security, get her career. At 55, the child's about to leave home. She's in a 7-year relationship. She has 20 years of experience. And I said, what I see those goals, the energy behind those is choosing. Yet in your head, you're still trying to use the chase energy.
Okay. Yeah.
And as soon as she thought, oh my God, I can be in the choosing energy of my life as opposed to the chasing energy, it changed everything.
Yeah.
And it allowed her to redefine what that meant. And, you know, for me, you ask about, you know, where I went in that. I was in a very chase energy and I was forced into probably the worst kind of energy that I would have resisted, which was settling. And I don't mean settling for or settling with. I mean, I had to settle in my own skin. I was robbed of all of the escape routes that I had previously had. Traveling, adventurous career, you know, chase, 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 tick the boxes. And I had to have very little agency in my life, 3 small children, caring for my mom. And I had to go through the huge discomfort of the energy of figuring out who am I. Cheryl Stray talks about it. I say, change the question from what do you want your life to look like to what do you want your life to feel like. But she writes it beautifully, of course. She says, we start off asking the question, who am I? And then hopefully we get to midlife and we say, who am I really?
Mm.
And that's such a gorgeous question. But a lot of it is, you know, I've moved into a very creative energy in my life. My kids are teenagers about to leave. I'm in this amazing state of growth and learning and creativity. But I'm still at home with kids and looking after different people and dogs and cats and God knows what. But I'm also, in terms of who I'm becoming, I want to become, in maybe 5 years when Ruby's left school, into an energy of freedom. Not freedom from responsibility, but freedom to choose better, freedom to travel more, freedom to... And I think it's really important to check in with what is the energy that I need now to direct my life to become the person I am and the person I need to be.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And I suppose consistency is key to that as well, isn't it? In terms of, and the reason is, I suppose for me, I'm listening to you, and I suppose anyone listening will be listening to you speak, but also taking from what you're saying and kind of examining their own life perhaps and what needs attention. And for me, I know that I haven't been giving, say, the exercise bit of me enough attention. I keep long fingering it because life is so busy and this and that. So and yes, I go out for the walks, but I'm not doing the types of stuff that I would like to be doing. And again, it comes down to me.
Yeah, and you're becoming, and you have become many things over these last 15 years.
But it's nice reminders. It's important because then that's a check-in for me. Okay, that thing that keeps jumping into your head, you need to look at that. You know, stop pushing that away because it needs attention.
And who will you hurt by doing it?
Exactly, no one.
No one.
No one.
And who will you become when you do it? And it's not
a stronger, fitter version of me.
Yeah, yeah, and you're becoming stronger and fitter. You're broadening the width of your life in lots of different ways, and that's just another one. But another way to look at it then is, you know, in 10 years, if we were having this conversation, who will you have become even more? Who, you know, I can only imagine, because you're such an aware, deep, you're pulling at threads, you're curious, you're very courageous, and where is that going to take you? Who are you becoming? And some of that you will invest in and some of it will happen, but you are naturally pulling at threads. Obviously, Gaza and the political scene is one of those that you're pulling right now. Where will that lead you? But who do you need to become for teenagers, for example?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of person do you need to become to be in a relationship that is 10 years longer, where you'll have had a lot of experiences with each other, some great, some not so great? You need to become the best version of yourself so that you can support yourself through it rather than react to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It really does. Do you mind if we go back to, okay, so Ruby is 13 now, but obviously within a few days of her being born, your life changed forever, as you said, and your poor mum lived the way she was for a period of 5 years. But a year previous to her death, your husband then landed a bombshell. You came out with it there, and we kind of just moved on and glossed over. But it's probably on the scale of big things happening in terms of breakups. It's right up there.
But isn't that gas that big things can happen, but because there's other bigger things happening, that it can take time. And that's another thing about that becoming piece. You do, it will always catch up with you. So I do think, and I know there's women listening to this now who are just going, oh, yeah, 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 but I'll wait till they're a bit older. I'll wait till they're in school. I'll wait till they've gone to secondary school. I'll wait till they've left home. And then I'll deal with that. Just deal with it now, because then you can get on with becoming who you need to become. And it was really interesting. I was very unhappily married for a long time.
Did you know why?
No. And I knew that something was wrong, and I certainly do not want to talk for him.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, it's not rocket science to know that there was definitely something wrong. And there was, I liken it to, there was just, I couldn't see the picture. And then the last piece of the jigsaw. And then I was like, oh, of course, that's the picture.
Right.
But until you see the picture.
And why would you have seen it in a sense? Because you're married, you have three kids together. Why would that even jump into your mind as a thought?
But there was a huge emotional disconnect, and I could never get anywhere close to those conversations.
When it revealed itself, as in when he told you how...
Well, I find out, but yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
That was fun.
Right.
Which was good, but I've said this before, and I asked, there was a big row happening, there was a lot of stuff going on, and it came out. And I remember, I'd say 15 seconds, it might have been five, I don't know. I just felt utter relief. Okay. Utter relief until the tsunami hit me of what this meant. And then, but all through those next few days and weeks and years even, when I was trying to figure out how we were going to form a functioning family together, and, you know, I wanted that for my children, and that relief feeling was there as a little guiding light.
Okay.
That this was the right, I needed to be out of here. This was, there was a relief at knowing, oh, finally I'm not doubting myself and questioning myself, and the answer is there. It's not a nice answer. I don't love the answer.
Sure.
But oh my God, at least I have an answer.
Is it because, if it's not too personal to ask, would you have not been the person to maybe leave? Is that what you were worried about?
Well, that's what's really interesting. We talk about becoming, you know, I often, part of, you know, aging powerfully, for want of a better word, is that connection to self. And like I say, women weren't necessarily brought up to have that relationship with yourselves. And I think the most important relationship you have is the one you have with yourself.
Mm.
I often say the most important conversations you have are the ones you have with yourself first and last thing at night.
Yes.
I will literally wake up every morning now, and I was not this soldier. I was very critical of myself. I used to have post-it in my 20s. I would have post-it notes on my mirror saying fat bitch so that I would wake up in the morning and see it and not eat the breakfast. Like,
oh, Alana, really?
Oh, really? So
okay, okay.
The first thought that's in your head is not always yours. You know, that's a conditioning. Well, if you think about that messaging, that's not just a throwaway comment. When you think about the secret messaging that women receive. So when I was born in 1970, that means in the 80s when I was turning into a woman and I was a teenager and trying to figure out who I was and what I was going to look like and how I was going to fit into the world. I had boobs and hips. Like, I had an hourglass figure. 20 years ago, I'd have been delighted with myself. But the body du jour, just when I was 16, was Kate Moss.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I absorbed the message that somehow my body wasn't right. And, you know, I spent 40 years doing Pilates classes to get a small arse, and now big arses are in. I mean, honest to God, it is exhausting, the messages that we get.
No, I hear you. And look, you're dead right. I mean, there is so much work being done in the space now because we're aware of, you know, as the toxic nature of diet culture and how much we were absorbing, we didn't even realize it growing up in the 80s, 90s.
But that, and now it's aging, and now it's,
and it still exists. It's not that it's gone, but I think there's a lot more conversation about it. What I'm learning is it's about body neutrality. It's just acceptance.
It's acceptance. So I am the soldier who used to be that abusive to herself.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I did not know I had the dimmer switch control.
Yes.
But I am not ashamed to say that I wake up every morning and I go, hello, lovely.
Okay, brilliant.
And I have a conversation with myself at night. And I've had to, you know, that has been such a turnaround for me because I look.
And do you physically kind of rub your arm?
I physically rub my arm.
Lovely.
I rub my arm and go, hello, lovely. And I don't even open my eyes. And so I don't say it out loud. I say, lovely. Because it's such an important start to the day.
Yes.
And whether or not you have a partner or not, if you rely on somebody else to give you that love, you're disempowering yourself. You're giving somebody else that power. So whether you're with the love of your life, whether you've got 15 kids in your bed all hugging you, that's still the most important conversation to have with yourself.
Now, interestingly, I know that because we've kind of gone back to it quite a few times, but the 16-year thing in terms of how we knew each other and used to see each other, you know, for a period of time once a week, what always struck me with you is I felt like you had a huge capacity for compassion. You always spoke from the heart. Like the way you spoke to us that day, you were so full of heart and so full of, I'm really gutted for you, you know, and that wasn't, wasn't at all fake. Despite what was going on for you at that time, you had the capacity to share your concern for us, you know. So I think you've always had that within you, but perhaps, yes, there were the other voices at play also.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I would be very good at doing that externally. And often when I'm working with a woman, we'll do a thing about strengths. And so my top strength is zest, creativity, love, kindness. But those, the reason that companies do those kind of tests is to see what kind of person you are externally, right? So what is the output? So I'm brilliant at that. I can do that. And I have one child who's definitely a highly sensitive person, and I'm in that space a little bit, not as much as her. You feel things, and that allows me to go into this space for my work. It feels naturally. But there's also that sort of the side of it where
you can do it for others, but not yourself.
I couldn't do it for myself. And when I'm asking women to look at your strengths, saying they'll come back, oh God. And so one of my bottom strengths was self-regulation. The number of women who come back with their lowest strength as self-regulation. So it's all about output, but they can't bring a bit. So what I say to them is, I want you to write those five top strengths on a post-it note, stick it on your dressing room mirror, and say to you, and so if it's fairness or love or kindness, how can I be kind to myself today?
Mm.
How can I be fair to myself today? Because we're so busy trying to be fair to everybody else. How can I be fair to myself? And one of the things, you know, I went through a bit of marriage where, you know, I didn't feel loved, and I felt a huge disconnect with who I was presenting to the world versus what was going on. And so I had to take ownership of that. I had to go, if I have to love myself, and I have to take ownership for becoming everything I have to become, regardless of whether it's good, bad or indifferent in my life. No one's coming to save me. Unfortunately, no matter how many nights I sat there waiting, Keanu Reeves did not come to my front door. He is not coming to take me away. So I have to save myself. And I think everyone has to do that. And it's really hard for women to feel that they've got to save themselves, but they're so busy saving others. You've got to save yourself first.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to save yourself first. And then from that place of strength, you can do, I mean, I'll
have
so many women come to me and go, oh, but, you know, I feel bad complaining. Oh, I've got, you know, I've got this. And, you know, you'd only have to switch on the news and look at Gaza and go, well, how can I complain about anything in my life? These people have zero agency. You can't do anything from a place of drain. You've got to do it from a place of strength. And that was one of the messages that women didn't get. So
yes,
turn down that dimmer switch which said, you know, it's oh, don't get what, look at her, she's got notions, you know, yeah, you know. Go to the gym, put yourself first, make somebody else make the dinner, you know, prioritize things that are important for you. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm saying that to myself as much as anybody
else.
No,
I hear you. I hear you.
Because that's where you're, that's how you will become the person you're meant to be.
Sure. And the thing is, like for me, this is definitely an example of self-sabotage because, you know, my partner is actually very supportive and mm-hmm. is always the one saying, absolutely do yeah. that.
When I say to somebody, you know, let's bring it down. So someone's come to me and it's just total shit show at home. So I'm thinking of particularly of one client, right? She's in her 40s. She's a big career. He's a big career. They've got three kids. It's, you know, it's
full
hectic.
On.
It's full on. They're at the cold face of life. Hates her husband, hates her kids, hates her parents, hates her job. That's how she was when she came to me.
Right.
Happens a lot, right?
Okay.
And that's because they're just an overwhelm. They're just an emergency mode and there's no capacity. And actually, when they can start investing in themselves, understanding that they've got to invest in becoming who they are as a person, they don't hate their husband. They don't hate their kids. They don't hate their job. It's the pressure, not the people.
Mm.
But anyway, this particular day.
And sometimes it does require change. Like,
and sometimes
wait a second.
They will go, I am going to leave this marriage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at least they're doing it from a place of self-knowledge.
Sure.
It's not from reaction, it's from response.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, aging powerfully is about being responsible, being response-able, able to respond to your needs. But anyway, this particular day, I could see in their dynamic that there was a bit of an equity because they're both working full time. They've got the three kids. They're both getting up in the morning, doing the morning routine, heading out to work. She would get up at ungodly hour, go to the gym, come home. They would do the morning routine, go to work because the gym was the one thing that gave her a sense of sanity.
Mm.
And then he worked as a volunteer in a sports club 3 or 4 days a week in the afternoons and early evenings, right? And that was great. That's where he got his nourishment. He's a good man. This is not about him being an asshole. But massive inequity. So she would come home from a full day of work. She's into the whole homework, kids, dinner. He's gone off. And then by the time he comes home, she hates him. Huge, much resentment. So we're talking. And eventually I said, what if you don't come home? And she went, what? No, I don't want to go home. And I said, no. What if you go to the gym? What if you stay in bed for an extra half an hour, go to the gym and go to work and don't come home? What if he does the morning shift? You do the afternoon shift. There's a sense of equity. The world doesn't fall apart. You're going to have to suck in that feeling that goes, oh, but that's not what a mother does, and see what happens. And she went, didn't have to be asked twice. She went, what if I don't come home? What if I don't come home? And she went home and she said to him, what if I didn't come home? Can you do the morning shift and I'll do the evening shift and then I might like you at the weekends? And he said, 100%. She's never gone home again.
Oh,
she gets an extra half an hour in bed.
That's
she goes
brilliant.
To the gym.
Yeah.
She has time to sit for 15 minutes before going into work with a cup of coffee. He is doing what he's a parent.
Sure.
And she's got to the point where one day she said to me, you'd be so proud of me. And I said, what? And she went, he said to me, look, I've got an early meeting on Thursday. So, and he just sort of threw it into the mix. And she in her head was going, not my fucking problem.
Yeah.
And she went, okay, right. That's tough. Yeah. Now, if he came to her and said, look, tell you what, would you mind not going to the gym this day and I will do something this day, whatever. But she just left the silence because I role model with so many women saying, just say, oh, what are you going to do? Don't fix. We fix everything.
Mm.
And in order for me to become the mother of an adult, I have to step back from fixing. Okay. I have to learn not to fix and let her make her choices. And then I'm here if she needs me. But anyway, so she let the silence hang. And I said, what happened? And he said, he just said, I'm going to get them up early and they'll just have to go to school half an hour early and they'll have to suck it up. And he dealt with it and she did her thing.
Wow.
So there's, if everyone takes one thing away today, it is, if life feels hard, it's usually because it is.
Yes.
And I ask what you need to support, but also start role modeling this phrase. Oh my God, I'm sorry, my love. What are you going to do? The number of women with adult children who are still fixing all of their adult children's problems. And it's not being horrible. It is about becoming. And who do they need to become?
It's also empowering them, isn't it?
So many women, and this is controversial, but I'll say it anyway. We are sucked up in that triad of turmoil, the people-pleasing, the perfectionism, the imposter syndrome. We are tied down by that old conditioning that a woman's value is what she does for other people. Mm. And we sometimes get something from it. So when I say to a woman, step back, stop saying yes to everything. And there's a little panic and I feel it. I feel it when my child suddenly doesn't need me as much and I'm chasing her down the road going, oh, here's some breakfast. Because I think, oh my God, that's my role. That's my show of love. And I have to go, no, what does she need from me? She needs me to go. You go to breakfast, school with no breakfast, you're done. But the number of women I role model go, just say, oh dear, what are you going to do? I'm here. I'm here to support you, love you, hug you. If you want my advice, I'll give it to you. But don't automatically jump in and fix them. Husbands, colleagues, parents, partners, children.
That's a, like that. And I'm sure this is going to land with people listening as a, oh, I'm going to try that. Because I feel it. I feel it. That was, thank you for sharing that. How brilliant for her and actually for their relationship. Because
what
first
happens
up,
if you don't go home?
Yeah. Well, first up, I think also kudos where it's deserved. Well done him. He obviously realized, wait a second.
100%.
If my wife is happier, then our relationship will be better initially. And then that she had the balls to take that beat, to take that breath.
And the key is often is articulating what it is you want. So I'm not giving any of her identifying, so I'm going to tell the story too. She had just told me that she'd spent the morning collecting all the shoes and fecking them into the children's bedrooms in a fit of fury, right? And there was a fit of choice language as well. And she'd had a complete and utter tantrum, which women do, because when life feels hard, it's usually because it is hard and it's unfair. We are living in a very unfair situation right now. And a thousand times she had screamed at her children and her husband, I need more help. But they did not know what that looked like.
Right.
And I've done that. And I know when I feel unseen and unheard in my house, it's because I'm not seeing and hearing myself. What is it I need? How do I articulate what I need? And then we're into a boundary and then we're off. But when you just scream, I need you to show up more.
But they don't know how to fulfill that.
They don't know
that.
How to do that. What does it actually mean?
Yeah.
For some women, that has been sit down with your husband and say, could you do homework twice a week? Could you do this? Could you do that? For others, it's, I'm not going to come home. Can you take that over? For others, it's, could we sit down together and look at a way that we could do this more equitably? I call it sanity versus standards, right? So you have to decide whether your sanity is more important than some fake standard of what a house should look like or be like or whatever. But there will be some standards you want. I mean, I have three girls. There must be 564,000 pairs of white sneaker socks every wash.
Yeah.
Nothing matches ever. And so I made the decision, sanity over standards. There are certain things I do. I make good food. I try and keep the house. You know, I have a favourite child and you're not meant to say that, but you know, I have three daughters and my favourite child is my robot Hoover, which I treated myself to last year. But one of the standards that I decided is not worth my sanity is the laundry. I wash it, I dry it, I put it in a basket, sit at the top of the stairs, sort your life out.
Yeah,
I
nice
am
one.
Not separating that out into your bedrooms, right? And it sits there and sometimes it's a total shit show. I go and get my stuff out of it. My stuff's fine.
I love that though, sanity versus standards. That's so good. I can see how satisfying the work that you do is for you, and obviously clearly it is for the women that you're working with as well, when they get those moments of clarity, they put it into action and then they see the benefit of talking it out and the tips that you give them. And it's because you're coming from a place of you're living it, because you had a lot of stuff thrown at you in a period of time that was all felt really intense. So from that year of your marriage breaking down, your mom passed away. So you're dealing with the grief of the end of a relationship and trying to navigate that. And I'm sure every breakdown of a relationship is difficult, But clearly then when you have kids involved and then you have the added layer of him revealing what his true sexuality was, that's another thing to try and navigate for you and for the kids and for him, like for all of you.
That happened, and I think I was so busy trying to form the functioning family for the kids that that became my priority. That was the energy that I put into how we recovered from the marriage. Yeah. And my mum was dying. And it was 2 years later that I was sitting working one day and a notification came down on my phone saying Philip Schofield had come out live on TV. And I came to, I don't know how many, 45 minutes, and I, at that point, I hadn't passed out, but I just became conscious again of realising I had just watched that video 35 times in a row. And it absolutely floored me.
Okay.
And I realised, oh, I didn't deal with that bit. I didn't deal with that bit. And I had to watch that video over and over again to try and a lot of coaching is about, when do I need someone to pull back and get perspective on their life? I'm in this, but you're becoming constantly, you know, in 10 years, your kids will be teenagers. You're yeah. constantly changing. In 2 years, I will probably be in a very different shape of my life between my dad and my daughter going and different things. So you're constantly, so sometimes it's about pulling back and getting perspective. And sometimes it's about honing in and going, what is the actual problem that is actually smothering everything? What's the one muscle in your body that's not working, that's stopping your whole body working? It's a self-limiting belief or it's something. And I had to listen to that tape over and over again. And I realized there was two things that he said. One was my wife knew everything and I didn't. So that hit me like a stone. And I can't even remember what the other one was. And I thought, oh, that. But it's my responsibility now to process that piece. Mm. You know, Jay Shetty talks about the gifts and the gaps from our childhood. Everyone, regardless whether you have the best childhood or the worst, you're going to get gifts and gaps. And I had amazing, amazing gifts and gifts from my childhood. And there were gaps. And one of the gaps was voice. I grew up in a family of introverts, which means I was called too much. I was too much, too loud, too opinionated, too much.
Right.
So we're talking about writing that voice. It's taken me until being in that settled stage to figure out, oh, this is my voice. You know, often what we do is we take those gaps and we either try and find someone else to fill them, but we need to fill them ourselves. So when I listened to that piece, it was, I never got heard. I was so busy. Everyone was supporting him. Oh, poor, oh, how brave you are, how brave you are, how brave you are. No one was saying to me, you're collateral damage in this. And I had to jump on the you're so brave bandwagon. So it took me a couple of years to go, oh no, actually, I'd quite like to be heard here too.
Yes.
This hurt.
Yeah.
This really hurt. But that's okay. And I think that is, we are constantly becoming. And you don't become in big, bold steps. You become with every single day how you process. Is that first thought belong to me?
Mm.
What's the next thought? What can I be responsible for? Who do I need to be next for this child in this age? Who do I need to be for myself? Who do I need to be in this relationship? I talk a lot about women who are maybe redefining marriages or coming out of marriage. But, you know, if you're in a relationship for 20, 30 years, you need to constantly refresh and redefine what's my definition of success now. When we're forming a family, it was this.
Yes.
When we're raising a small family, it's this. Who do we need to be for each other when we're this? Who are
really
we each becoming individually as well as who do we need to become as a couple?
Yeah. So where are you at now? I mean, I can feel it from you without even you giving me the answer. But it'd be interesting to hear where things are at now. You know, time has passed. And I know out of respect to your ex, you don't want to necessarily talk about him. But where are things at with you guys as a family, with you as an individual woman at this stage of your life? How are you doing with it all?
I am... great. I'm 54. I have a really dynamic relationship with my past selves. I go back to that girl who put the post-it notes on the mirror and I go, look what I do now. Yeah. You're going to be okay. But the one I look at most is the woman, and I can picture her sitting on the bed like this. The marriage had just ended. My mum was dying. I remember sitting on the bed, not knowing how I was going to get forward. And I send love back to her all the time. And I visualize myself sitting beside her and putting my arm around her and saying, you're going to be okay. I promise you. I'm here. Look, I'm over here and I'm doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the other thing is, I'm really proud of her because she got me here. I didn't. the person who's sitting here today didn't get me here. She did. Somehow she figured out a way to get help, to get the support she needs, to figure out what was really important, to use the right energy at the right time. I'm here in a space where I have a really good functioning family in that sense that the kids have two parents who engage. You know, Ruby finished primary school. I sat in the front row with my ex-husband and his boyfriend as she graduated. That doesn't mean there aren't feelings.
Sure.
But I choose the emotional energy that's going to give me the best freedom to get on with my life.
Yes.
I'm still waiting for Keanu Reeves, but barring him coming along, I'm in a really good space. You know, when I first started thinking about dating, I started to date in the traditional sense. And then I realized very quickly, I have no emotional capacity for this. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of work with women in this space of going, hang on, are you ready? Why don't you get to know yourself first? Figure out who your single sexual self is. So yeah. I had to figure out, who am I as a sexual woman at 45?
Yeah.
The last time I dated was last century, you know? And so that was an energy. And now I feel I've got more emotional capacity. My kids are teenagers, one's leaving. I'm much more ready for a relationship. So I'm in that exciting space.
That is exciting. That's really exciting. Yeah.
If just Keanu Reeves would get onto Tinder, that would be great. Thank you.
So Midlife, Redefined, Better, Bolder, Brighter, second book, but the third book is in the works.
I'm writing Midlife, Sex, Sensuality and Relationships Redefined. Kids are thrilled with all the research books around the house. Because it's such an important thing, and it's not just sex. It is your relationship with yourself. The sensuality piece is probably the most important, because I mean it in the sense of self, connection to self, being aware of your senses, your taste, your touch, your you know, investing in. When I go on my morning walks with a dog, I try and invest in the bird song and the greenery and the smell. I try to be here while I'm here. Because so much of life is barrel down and, you know,
but to
lift it up. So the sensuality piece is, regardless of whether you're in a relationship or single, it's that relationship with yourself.
Mm.
Then there's the sex piece about, because there are, you know, women can have a whole surge of feelings after they've had children and they're free again, or it can be difficult. And then relationships, whether that's in a marriage or whether it's a new one, but it's doing it on your terms. What is it I need? It's updating the software. What is my definition of success? You know, I did say this on the Tommy Tiernan show when Daisy didn't really forgive me, but I'll say it again now. You know, I'm at the stage of life where I want to take a man's shirt off, not iron it. What stage are women at?
Love that.
So many women that have been married and divorced, not all, and it's not nothing saying anything about men, they don't want to live with anybody again. They've maybe never lived alone.
Yeah.
And they've given so much to a family, and now they're single in their 50s or 60s, and they want a relationship, they want sex, they want camaraderie. But they don't want
all the other bits.
So divorced is a great thing in many ways, because I only have my kids every other weekend.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you have the freedom.
Yeah, I have freedom that a lot of my married friends don't have, and I don't have. I have a loneliness they don't have. Although I was lonelier in my marriage than out of it. In fairness, so I do think.
Yeah.
We get to redefine, and that is one of the really positives about where we are. That we don't have to be in a relationship to be acceptable.
Yeah.
It's okay to be single, I go on a lot of retreats and different things, and I see this whole swathe of women in their 40s, 50s, 60s traveling alone, going places like Bali and Greece and having fun. And my mother's generation just didn't have that. And, you know, that's a positive.
Yeah.
You can have what you want in a way that we didn't before, but you've got to know what you want.
Your mum had that awful stroke. And then she had those years before she died. But if she was here, if that hadn't happened, and she was to view what you have done with your life since, not just helping yourself, but helping other women, empowering other women, what would she think?
I took this off because it was going to make a noise, but this is my mum's handprint. And when she was dying, you know those little kits that you can get to take a child's handprint, a baby's handprint, and you use them for cufflinks? And my mum had always held my hand and always put her hand on me. She was a very tactile person. And so for me, it was that thing. And her hand is always on my back, and I carry her handprint with me. And I do what I do because when I was a teenager, I thought my mum had a nervous breakdown. You know, she was suicidal a couple of years. She was absolutely at the end of her tether. And now, of course, I look back and realise she was menopausal. She'd had a hysterectomy, had no support. She felt viscerally negated by society as she got older. I mean, she lived, so when I was a teenager in the 80s and into the 90s, 20s, there wasn't a news female newsreader over the age of 30.
Yeah.
Women over a certain, you had Benny Hill, where women were either sexy beasts or old hags. And she hated being disappeared by society. And so she is very at the front of the work that I do.
Yeah, sure.
As is the fact that I have three amazing daughters.
Exactly.
And I talk about our generation being the bridge.
Yeah.
We are the bridge between the women who couldn't. We're in that transactional part of moving from a patriarchy to an equity. And we have to redefine. We have to role model. We have to trailblaze. We have to grab this life by the love handles and turn down the dimmer switch on all of the bullshit that put women in a place and made them feel smaller and negative and critical. And we have got to learn how to thrive as individuals, as well as the roles and responsibilities that we have, so that our daughters can walk into this world becoming everything that they can be.
Alana, you're incredible. And this has been so gorgeous for me on so many, for so many different reasons. But I think there's an element of, if we could go back in time to that, you know, not even the last day, but the period of time where that show was being made and somebody showed us crystal ball and maybe 5 minutes of this chat, what we would have thought, you know. And I love the fact that you kind of speak to the younger versions of you with compassion, with love.
Oh, I send it back because they're still a part of me.
Yeah.
And if they're still feeling unheard and lonely, that's still in me. So I send back love, even to the arsehole me's who, you know, made, you know, I know you were just doing, you were just trying your best. Because when I turned 53 years ago, I had a lit up dance floor in my dining room, and I went in before everybody arrived. And I mentally, because I kind of do this work with myself, I kind of welcomed all the past me's into that room, and I had a little moment with myself. I'm not mad, really, honestly. And I brought them along.
No,
I just
it.
Said, thank you for bringing me here. Every one of you brought me here.
Yeah.
And then I kind of looked to the ones that have blurred faces because I haven't created them yet, but they're a part of my life too. And I am just this transitional figure between them and them, and I'm responsible for us all.
Mm.
And we're all part of me becoming, as all of your parts are part of you
becoming.
Yeah,
for sure, for sure.
And please send love and kindness to the ones who really hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. Such important work that you do. It's so important.
And you. And thanks for giving so many people the platform. I love your podcast.
Oh, well, I love
who
conversations
you are becoming.
Like this. Thank
I
you.
Love who
Thank
you are
you. Thank you so much. Thank you so, so much. For people listening, if they're thinking, I need Alana in my life, how do I get in touch with her?
I'm on Midlife Coach on Instagram, and thank you for that. I'm the midlifecoach.org, and there's lots of ways. There's a free download on my website, but it will give you that chance to just check in with yourself. Where am I? Who am I? How am I at this age and stage? And I'd love you to even do that.
Yeah, great.
And make a date with yourself. I had a client who stopped work with me, and she said, what am I going to do every Friday? And I said, keep the date with yourself. And 5 years later, once a month, she still meets with herself in a cafe on a Friday at 11 o'clock with a journal.
Love that. Love that. It's so important to take time,
invest
for ourselves.
Yourself, yeah.
Let's have another chat.
In 10 years.
Yeah.
Let's become. Who are we going to? I'm so excited.
I'll be mid-50s. You'll be in your 60s.
Well, I'll maybe do it from Bali because I'm hoping to.
Fabulous.
Keanu Reeves will be serving me a drink and I'll be running my retreats in Bali. But no, I would love to.
Incredible.
Because I want to become so much more.
Yeah, great. It's exciting.
It's exciting for all of us. And if you're feeling stuck right now, thinking you're stagnating, please know you are still becoming, and that this person today who you are will become who you need to be, will look back and say, thank you for showing up for myself.
If this episode has helped you and you'd like to connect with Alana, you'll find her details in the show notes. And if you liked this pod, you might appreciate previous episodes like the one I recorded with visibility coach Kate O'Dwyer from October 2023 and the menopause episodes with Catherine O'Keefe from April 2021. Thank you so much for listening to Ready to Be Real.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.